You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Mark, Ryan, children, listeners, gather round. It's story time. 'Tis the season. That's right. December. Gather round, young, old, old, young. It's time. 2, 3, 4, gather around, young and old, old and young. It is that special time of year where we will talk about songs with death. Gather around, young and old, old and young, and everyone in between. This is the time to scream, young, old, in between. This one's for you, Jack, and this one's for you, Jill. Run now, because kill, kill, kill. It's December, gather around. Be the happiest survivor in town. Music.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every single movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I keep having that dream again.
Oh, or is it a dream? And Erica.
Just wait for me, guys, in the lobby by the guard's desk. Everything's going to be fine. You're safe here. Nothing could possibly go wrong. Just wait for me.
That's right. And nothing could go wrong as we continue into December 2, Sleigh Bells Ring, where we talk about all the slasher films released by New World Pictures. And oh my gosh, do we have a good one for you in this episode. But before we get into it, let's just quickly say, hey, up top, we have a website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. You can find all of our episodes, our t-shirts, buy a t-shirt. If you want to support the show, buy a t-shirt. That's all. We don't have a Patreon. Buy a t-shirt.
There's got to be somebody on your gift list that you love
That's
enough
right.
or that you hate enough to buy them some New World Pictures podcast merch. What's your favorite merch, you might ask? Mine's the hat. What's your favorite merch, Ryan?
I enjoy our Air Erica mug that we have. I have a nice Op Center mouse pad as well.
I go for the classic tee. You know, I like the t-shirts. And really, here's the thing. Nothing is better than on Christmas morning handing someone that you love or that you hate a gift that they'll open and say, "What the fuck is this?"
Or on Hanukkah, you could give multiple New World Pictures podcast gifts.
Absolutely.
We have a variety.
7 nights of gifts.
We have more than 7 designs, so.
So many gifts.
Write that down.
Whatever you're celebrating, it's a perfect gift for that celebration. And the same response. What is this? And why did you give it to me? But now let's get into the episode, because we are going to talk about this very, maybe, underseen slasher. We're talking 1984's The Initiation.
Before the initiation begins, the subjects are studied. Even their dreams are recorded. Before the initiation begins, the testing areas are selected. The sorority house, the sanitarium, the empty shopping mall.
Delta Rho Chi.
And just before the initiation begins, a toast is required.
And to being young, staying young, and dying young.
The initiation.
Delta Rho Chi, be with you.
A fraternal tradition for over 100 years.
Delta Rho Chi.
Created for only one purpose.
Pleasant dreams.
The initiation. The ceremony that will never die. As long as new blood is pledged.
Delta Rho Chi never will die.
That's right. 1984 is the initiation. Brought to you by Johnson's Sharp Hand Rakes. Aren't you tired of hand rakes that are blunt and not sharp whatsoever? Here at Johnson's, we believe in using the sharpest blades for our hand rakes for better penetration into soil. This was directed by Larry Stewart. He was a TV director who had recently worked on episodes of Buck Rogers in the 25th Century and Here's Boomer, a series about a stray dog who wanders around helping people, which only lasted for two seasons in the early 1980s. Now, if you think his TV background disqualified Stewart from making a slasher, well, you're half right, as Stewart was not the first director hired. Another TV director, Peter Crane, was initially hired, having directed a few feature films in his native Britain in the 1970s. And by the 1980s, was also directing TV shows such as Knight Rider and The Fall Guy. Crane was fired after, I think, maybe 3 days or so, but definitely on his first week, once he fell behind schedule. And that's when Stewart was brought in to finish the film. This was written by Chris Pratt Jr., who was fresh from USC Film School, where he met producer Scott Winant, but he had been writing for General Hospital and would go on to write for Santa Barbara, made by New World Television, and he would eventually write and direct episodes of Melrose Place, which starred Daphne Zuniga, who is got an introducing credit in this, even though this is not her first role.
I thought that was funny.
Does that make Melrose Place a nearly new world?
I don't know.
Please.
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
2025, all we talk about are episodes of Melrose Place.
Next year. That could be it for next year. That could be next, yeah.
You could put it into Ha Haggis.
Then we laugh at episodes of Melrose Place.
Sometimes you'll laugh, sometimes you'll cry. It's Melrose Place.
She had actually made her first appearance in The Dorm That Dripped Blood.
Ew.
From 1982. That was her first role, which the people that made it, some of those people worked on Torment. They went on from this to Torment because they had all, it was at UCLA where she went. A bunch of people went from that and went on to The Power and then Torment. You can check out our interview with some of the editors of Torment, and you can see we'll mention that film in there. In any case, this is her first lead role, so maybe that's why they put introducing into the credit. But anyway, she told Why So Blue in 2016 that she learned a lot about acting from this experience in this movie. She said, quote, "But it was all new to me, the technicality of the filming and everything. Before that, I had done theater, so another thing I learned in the initiation was to tone it down. I think during one close-up, the director said to me, 'You're supposed to be listening. Why are you moving your forehead and mouth so much? Just listen.' And I'm thinking, I'm listening, but the audience has to know that I'm listening, so I have to show them that I'm listening." He's like, "No, you don't. The camera is this close. Just listen."
I just want listeners to know I'm listening right now to Ryan. I'm listening. I can hear him. I'm nodding in agreement at this acknowledgement of learning this new information about Daphne. This is my listening voice. This is what it sounds like when I listen.
You sound like the Fairchilds. You're,
oh,
you
have that, thank you.
You have that upper crust. Do you say amnesia or amnesia?
Amnesia.
Do you say leisure or leisure? I think these are decisions we have to make. Have you been or been to the movies? Are you wearing pajamas or pajamas? I think we can go all night with
I'm a Fairchild. I'm wearing a negligee. How dare you?
One last credit I want to just mention up top is the music, which was done by a finger being placed down on one key.
It is. It gave me a lot of hope that I could do soundtracks.
They were all composers as far as this movie's concerned.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, wow.
Here's where you can watch The Initiation. I did find a copy that was on YouTube, but beware, it is the edited version. There was an edited version in the UK where they cut out all the bloody stuff. But at the time of this recording, I did find it on, I don't know how to say this exactly, because I've never heard of this streaming service, Tubi? But it's...
We talk about it all the time.
Nope, it's not. Philo. Philo. Philo, or I want to say Philo. I want to imagine that it's one guy named Phil who's like, hey, I started a service. It's called Philo. It's my service. I'm Phil. I just created it. Anyway, at this time, it is free there with ads. There's also the Arrow Blu-ray, but that is now out of print. But that's how we watched it, was on the Arrow Blu-ray.
Oh, good. We own it. Great. Terrific. It's great news. It's great news.
But that's where you can watch The Initiation. Let's talk about what this movie's about. Mark, what is The Initiation about?
Well, The Initiation is about Todd, who just can't find any me time. Between his deadbeat brother hitting him up for favors, working three jobs, the constant doctor visits about his GERD flare-ups, Todd is at a breaking point. When he's asked to take a night shift, take on the night shift at the Fairchild building, jumps at the opportunity to get away from it all. With a six pack of generic beer under one arm and a fresh copy of Swank magazine under the other, he looks forward to a quiet night all to himself. But this night, he's far from alone.
That's so true. It's so true. And they really give him like a scene.
Yeah.
Of him just walking around and look at the flashlight and like, is that something? Is that something? Like,
right.
It's like, just get to it. We know what's going to happen to this guy. He's showing up after an hour. We know this guy isn't going to last long.
Right.
Erica, what is this movie about?
Philo. Philo.
Fair.
Wanted to make sure we got it correct because I'm a Fairchild and the details matter until we need you to forget them. Then they don't matter.
I hope their logo is be the first one in and the last one out on streaming.
Ooh, that's good. That's good.
Call us, Philo. Call us.
Yeah, that's
or
good.
Or Philo. Phil, call me.
Wait, so you're Philip Oliver and you just made it Phil-O?
Philo! It's my streaming service.
I've got a Pentium 100 sitting in my basement, and I've got a bunch of movies on it. Yeah. I just let people tap into it.
I put a bunch of movies on my Plex. Oh, so it's a Plex service? No, it's Philo. Come watch. Like, all right. Okay, whatever. All right, Erica, what is this movie about?
This movie's about one mom's quest to party down. Whether it be porking a Fairchild or getting drunk, this Fairchild mom is looking to party. Are you listening? I need an audible that you're listening.
Oh, well, for me, this movie's about the fact that once you take part in an affair where the person being cheated on is burned alive, you can't marry the person that you cheated with because the relationship has already peaked.
It's true.
You'll never do better than that moment.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose interest because you're just right. Like,
I have so many questions about that. I know we're not at final questions, but like when you watch your current husband burn alive, do you just leave the house and drive away? Do you call the cops? Do you call the ambulance? Do you plug in an air freshener? Like, what's the next step here? I just, right. What's...
You go to Walmart, you pick up a couple of Glade plugins, you come back, you pop those bad boys in.
You stay in the house?
The way the characters react in this movie, you're absolutely right. That's when they're like, yeah. Oh my God, this is horrible. He's burning alive. Let's quickly cover the smell.
Yeah.
Priorities.
Also... like, how hot did they need that room to be? That fire was out of control.
Blazing.
They have a fireplace in the bedroom, and it is blazing.
It was
like, did roaring. You need? Was did you need the sweatiest sex of your lifetime?
It was swamp sex.
Was that the goal?
It was complete swamp sex.
The Fairchilds do it swamp style.
It is so steamy in that room.
Oh, I want to get down and also get a thick sweat on, okay?
But not because of the act. It's just because of the room. That's all
yeah.
That is mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's the Letterboxd synopsis. We're on Letterboxd. Give us a follow there if you happen to be on the service as well. But here's what they say. An amnesiac sorority member. Okay, hold on. She's a pledge. She's not a member.
Not a member. Mm-hmm.
Already problematic.
So, mm-hmm. Sorority member who has been plagued by a recurring nightmare, that's true, is mm-hmm. stalked mm-hmm. alongside other co-eds, other pledges, by a killer in a deserted department store, kind of a mall, really.
Yep.
Where they are completing a hazing ritual.
Mostly right, but also the repeated nightmare. It's not a nightmare, it's a memory.
Well, but that's different. For you to find out in the movie, right? I mean,
well,
they have to put a nightmare.
Attention, everybody.
Because...
If you're worried about spoilers with this one, please stop the episode now and go ahead
watch
and watch
the movie.
Because there's going to be spoilers.
This is a twist. This has got a twist. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to get into it.
If you've seen any movie... made around that time frame. About right. 3 minutes into it, you're like, okay, there's a twin, right? Like,
I mean,
there have been episodes of Murder, She Wrote that had me more going, oh, I didn't see that one coming.
Angela, you shocker.
Mark, I'm so glad you brought up the producer, Bruce Lansbury, who is indeed Angela's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And is the producer of this film. So great job. Just fitting that in. You. Just seamless. Mm-hmm. Seamless.
Love it.
So that opening dream sequence, or is it a dream sequence? That's where we start the movie. And then it's this fire and very hot room. And then Daphne Zuniga as Kelly, she wakes up into a sorority initiation.
Never will die. Delta Rho Chi. Never will die. Delta Rho Chi.
Rise, lowly pledge. The sentinel calls. 'Tis the hour of the oath.
This was problematic for me because if I'm going to wake up and everyone's around, how does everybody get into that room with lit candles, chanting a song, and you don't wake up until they're already all around you?
I think you absolutely know how that's possible. Hello? I mean, somebody could walk into the room with lit candles, air horns, bright lights if I'm asleep. Right. I'm not waking up till
also,
that alarm goes off.
How did she not wake up and immediately say, what the fuck, guys? Can you get out of the room, please?
She has that in her face, but she doesn't say it with her mouth, which I'm like, nah, freshman.
That might
freshman.
Have been the director. The director might have said, you don't need to say it. The camera's right there. Mm-hmm.
When she initially, her first take, she was like...
I'm listening.
I'm speaking without saying something, director. That's what I'm doing. I'm moving my mouth. as if I'm going to say something, but I don't because I'm shocked. They're like, you don't need to go that. You don't need to go that hard. But anyway, it makes sense that she wakes up and they're in a sorority press because it's called the initiation. And so right away, we get details of what's going to happen with the sorority pledge. It's an initiation. Okay, great. We're off to the races.
Come on, Megan. What's the prank?
I'm getting to it.
Your father's building. Fairchild's.
That exclusive emporium for the wealthy.
We're still in the management training program.
Good one.
Aren't you?
Yeah. Summers, anyway.
What about it?
You have access to the keys.
You know the alarm system. If your devoted trainer wanted to get in the middle of the night, you could arrange it, couldn't you?
I don't get your point, Megan.
It's very simple, sisters. We send the pledges into Kelly's father's store late Saturday night to steal the night watchman's uniform.
Okay, we're going to steal the uniform. Now, if you've seen any slasher before in your life, you kind of feel like, all right, they're going to go to the mall. They're going to steal this thing. Mm-hmm. It's all laid out. Mm-hmm. And then as they pull off the prank, they're all going to get killed. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's go to the mall, mm-hmm. right? No, we've got so much more to do before we actually get to this mall. We've got a sleep study to get into. Mm-hmm. We've got a party to hang out with and a killer to introduce. We've got so mm-hmm. much to do before we get to this mall that we've just set up in the opening moments. So be patient.
I actually wrote down at about 41 minutes into the movie, I'm like, when are they going to get back to the initiation? Because yeah. like, we right. introduce about 75 subplots that we have yep. to all
yep.
navigate through. Yep. And then when they get back to like, oh, the sorority, we're like, I'm like, oh, yes.
That's right. Right. An initiation. Right. That's right.
I completely forgotten there was even a prank involved. I was like, oh, shit. Oh, a prank. Oh, my God. Hasn't it been like 4 months? Wasn't she already accepted at this point? I don't.
Right.
Yeah. And let's go to the sanitarium first, where a nurse has zero control over the situation inside. And outside of it seeming like there are zero security measures in place, I think that is what gets her killed. Because she has really lost this place. And they're like,
right.
we have to take you out. But also, we have no security. So,
right.
Orderly! Orderly!
So that's how we get all of a sudden a killer into the mix. Next, we're going to meet Kelly's teacher, which... at first, you wouldn't feel like these two are going to hook up, but then you do.
Hold on. Before we play this, that was never a mystery to me. That was like, that was just, we just had to wait. We had to go through the paces, oh, but that was inevitable.
But just wait, just see how it reveals itself. It's so nice.
Why dreams and nightmares?
It's a fascinating subject.
Excuse me, but it wouldn't have anything to do with the fact that I'm writing my doctoral thesis on dream analysis, would it?
No. I mean, I didn't know.
You didn't know.
I have my own reasons, Mr. Adams.
It's Peter.
It's Peter indeed.
Hey. I came at you pretty hard there, but we're good, right?
But I can come at you harder.
Oh!
Audio wink. Also, how could she know what his thesis was on? How the
Thank
hell
you.
Would
exactly.
She...
How in the hell would she have any idea what he's writing his thesis about? God, I'm pissed that she even wanted to hook up with him after that. He acted like such a schmuck. What a numbnut.
It's a small college. Apparently, it's all in one building. So, I mean, I guess word gets around.
They've
right?
got no. one Maybe? Big building, and that's where all classes take place.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, also, everyone knows these two are dating, like, immediately, which, mm-hmm. since he is a graduate student, should be cool. But then, he's also a teaching assistant. So, is that cool?
He's also 37, so...
It's So is that cool?
Which I also have to, going back two steps just really quick, I appreciated that Delta Rho Chi, a sorority that doesn't exist, except for this movie.
They have such a great song. They don't exist.
I know. They don't exist.
Delta Shit. Rho
I did look that up. But I appreciated that they let in people of all ages.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Going back to school to get your degree after, I don't know, failed marriage and a couple of kids. Welcome. Yeah. Hey, just starting college and, you know, just graduated high school and you're just starting college. Welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
If you make it through this pledge, this could be your sorority for 4 years or 12 years. It depends on how many units you want to take per semester.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for the young and the old and everyone in between.
Or maybe you want to take a couple gap years, but still participate in sorority functions.
Right. We have only one requirement, and that is if you're going to hang around this place, you need negligee.
That's it. That's it.
That's right. You got that's right.
Almost if you have that, you're in, but also you have to do one more thing. I wish, but I just don't know. Like, if that is a cool thing, I hope, I don't know if we, Janet from HR hasn't been in a while. I don't know if she's got any opinion on whether or not this is a good thing or not for,
Yeah, I don't know. She's on PTO. I haven't seen her. Yeah, I haven't heard from her. So, like, all bets are off. You know what I mean? If she's not listening. Shit, hold on. Hello? Shit, hold on, hold on, hold on. I think she's calling me. Give me 1 second. Hello? This is Erica.
Philo. Philo. Philo.
Oh, okay, never mind. That wasn't her. It was just Philo.
Philo! By the way, our teacher, Peter, is played by James Reed, who at that point, his biggest credit was Remington Steele, which he left after the first season. And that's what he did right before this. And then he goes on to appear in Beaches and Legally Blonde, and the North and South series of miniseries.
Oh my God, does that mean that Beaches is a nearly new world? Ooh, please, 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 please.
Oh, please.
That
no.
one would be a great one for June Gloom.
Oh, that.
Or Ha Haggis.
Yeah, that one's hilarious.
Or Dicember.
That's right.
It fits in a lot of different months.
Yes, it does.
That's right. Next December, a Convince Me
episode.
Hey,
guys. Hey, Janet from HR here. What? Erica, I'm going to need to talk with you about your Beaches joke. That's just really inappropriate. So if you could just give me a call when you get a chance. Thanks. You have my number. We've chatted before. Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Oh man.
Yeah, I got it.
Damn it.
Mind my P's and Q's on this one.
Ugh. Thank God we brought in an HR representative for this podcast. She's been on her ass. She really has. Now, if only we were able to participate in sleep studies without causing family drama, but it does. It causes all kinds of problems for Kelly and her mother.
What did you say this boy's name was again? Peter Adams, and he's not a boy. He is working towards his doctorate in parapsychology.
I don't care. I don't think you should see him again. He'll only confuse you more. Honey, haven't we always taken care of you? I mean, didn't your father get you the best doctors to see you through your amnesia?
And I still don't remember anything.
Well, what does it matter? You've grown up normal and healthy.
Except for the nightmare.
And they'll go away, too, given the chance and a little time. I just think an unqualified graduate student is only going to make matters worse. Now, I want you to promise me you won't see him again.
I can't do that.
Do you want me to talk to him?
No, I don't want you to talk to him. I will see who I want.
Ooh. And that's... Kelly's parents, by the way, her mom is played by Vera Miles of Psycho fame. In fact, she had just reprised her role in 1983's Psycho 2.
Which is a super good movie. I really like that.
It's a very good, I love the Psycho whole series, the franchise is low key pretty great if you don't know that already. But anyway, so she had just done that.
I've seen it.
Right? How many people listen to our Breaker Rant episode and are like giggling every single time they hear that bit?
At least 5 or 6.
What other podcasts have a repeating bit from Breaker Morant? I don't know. Anyway.
At least one. Enough.
There's at least one. There's at least one. All right. Anyway, she did Psycho 2. And then she would go on to appear later in the 1989 TV movie, The Hijacking of the Achille Lauro, for New World Television. So we will be able to talk about Vera Miles one more time.
Oh.
Nice.
But she agreed to do this movie because she met with the director, the original director, and got along so well. She was like, oh, I will definitely do this movie. Only to arrive to the shoot and find out he had been fired.
Oh my gosh.
She also only agreed to do 2 days.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Wow.
So you get
2 days. Wow. You get 2 days of Vera Miles and then I'm out. And playing the dad is genre favorite Clue Gulager, who we last spoke about in our episode of Teen Vamp. So go back and listen to that episode.
And be sure to listen to my spinoff podcast, Get a Clue, where I just talk about movies starring Clue Gulager.
You would go for a long time. You got a lot of material.
I'm behind that podcast. I'm down for that.
I can't wait to guest on it. I'm excited. This is a good idea. There could exist. I feel like that could exist.
I like that neither of you assume that you're a part of it, but that you're just a listener and a potential guest. This one's on me. Just purely on me.
Best of luck, Erica. Best of luck.
I was trying to find that clip from Teen Vamp. What did she say again?
He's not the bastard, you are. It's in our theme song.
You bastards.
He's not the bastard, you are. Oh, ridiculous. So I don't know if you guys will agree with me on this, but there is an element to this.
Next point.
Is an element to this movie that I think
he's not the bastard you are.
There it is.
Nice. Amazing.
So wait, at some point they then reintroduce that they're going to go to the mall. And by this time, like Erica said, I've completely forgotten what the prank is. I know that she has the keys and she's got to get the uniform from Todd, the security guard.
Right.
But here's the thing. She is breaking in she stole the keys to be able to get into the mall. And, you know, she does have a way to get the uniform and that she's going to grab an extra uniform that's in the locker room. But even the whole premise of breaking in, couldn't she have just said, hey, Dad, I'm joining this sorority. They want me to do this dumb prank. Can you just let me into the mall? Tell Todd that we're doing this so that he can just play along.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't seem like a big stretch. She could say, we're not going to mess anything up. It's just a dumb prank. Can you just let me in? And the dad probably would have been like, sure, fine. I'll let Todd know. Whatever. If that's what you want to do. Seems like a lot of extra work. That just by asking the right people who she may or may not be related to, could have solved a lot of problems here. Now, granted, it would have taken some of the movie away, but I just sort of felt like you're going about this the hard way. You could have gone about this the easy way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this movie doesn't want to go about things the easy way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going down. It's going down some hard roads. It's lit some robust fires.
The leader of the sorority takes all the sorority sisters, including the pledges, and brings them out at the front of the house to say, we're all going to go and do this. And then they pull up in a single Caprice Classic, which I know that they have bench seats, but you're still only going to be able to fit 6 into that car. what happened to the other sorority sisters? Did they all tap out and go somewhere else?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They're not into it. They're not into sticking around. I don't get it. They're like, yeah, we're good. You guys, best of luck. Have fun. Tell us how it all works out.
Yeah. Right.
But they're also not at home, to your point, because the one girl who stays behind, who gets the shower and eventually gets the phone call from Ken?
Steve? Ken?
What's his name?
Carl.
Andrews? I don't know. The doctor, student, teacher, middle-aged man.
Peter, right.
Peter! Yeah, sorry, that milk toast. Anyway, Peter. she's in the house alone. So where do all the rest of the Pledges go? Do they just go out for the night?
Right.
She's there alone.
Do Pledges get their own house?
That's what it kind of felt like. No, because they're all staying in that shitty room, which, incidentally, does not look like good accommodations. I mean, if that's where you're going to make me stay. Although, if we rewind to the beginning of the movie, the Rothschilds, or the Fairchilds, sorry, the Fairchilds are extremely wealthy, but yet Daphne Zuniga, her character wakes up with her parents having this swap sex, and she doesn't have a headboard. Like, they couldn't afford to kick down a headboard? It kind of seems like they could have. They live in a massive house.
Sweetheart, everything's going into the mall. All the money has to go to the mall. Wait, there what mall? People... Dad doesn't own a mall. Like, not the dad you think of, but the dad you're going to have.
That was the only way I could excuse her character for being okay in staying in this dirty attic of the sorority house. Because I would think that would be, I mean, for me, that would be enough to say, I can't join. If this is the kind of room I'm going to live in, no.
I don't understand why she's at all into doing this from the get-go. It doesn't seem to make any sense. She seems obsessed with figuring out this dream. She does mention at some point, she's like, I want to take a week off before Pledge Week. And then once it comes to actually doing it, she goes in that attic and she's like, who cares, guys? This is going to be fun. And I just want to have fun. I'm like,
yeah,
who is this person? You are everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't understand why you're even doing this. Admiral
just kicked in and she was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
It's going to be fun. Anyway. And so when we do get to the Fairchild building, by the way, they called it something different in the clip that we played, but when we see the outside, it's just called Fairchild Building.
Right.
Just like, with hey, like, dudes, you want to go over to Fairchild Building?
Mm-hmm.
Black Arial font. It's like, guys, you couldn't have come up with something a little more fancy, given like they're supposed to be really wealthy.
And it looks like a giant factory. It's like, oh, I can't wait to go and see what mysteries are in that building.
Right.
But once we get into it, and it's like an hour in when we finally are almost an hour in by the time we get there, we do settle into a fairly reliable slasher groove, which is nice. The three Pledges are pulling off the prank, while Megan, the leader of the Pledges, is also there, as Mark was saying, no one else, but she's there to bring some of the guys from the party to scare the girls, but also to have sex with her boyfriend. And then it's just her. And I guess they're just trusting Megan to report back and be like, it went great. Let them in the sorority.
Right. No, it doesn't make any sense. Like, while the slasher stuff is going on, you actually forget about Megan for a long time because she's not on screen. And we find out that she's been, like, basically making out with her boyfriend on a stack of Persian rugs for the last 15 minutes and didn't hear a single scream or any noise in the mall.
Which, don't get me wrong, being on that stack of rugs is dope. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not trying to take that away from you.
But imagine how cold
awesome.
It is on the stack of rugs without a fire just blazing inches away from you. They're probably freezing in there.
Fair.
Well,
fair.
No one wants to have that kind of room temperature sex. That's just not good. that's just boring. Who wants that? But they do. They're young.
At our age, I have to have two fireplaces going or I'm not even going to consider it.
One on either side of the bed.
Yes, because I don't want to roll over on the faraway side and be like, I'm cold now.
I need to be almost passing out from heat exhaustion before I will consider.
Exactly.
Speaking of the prank, things go smoothly and easily. In fact, they're done in minutes. They have a plan and it goes so perfectly. And then it's like,
right,
why not leave? They don't for a while.
Until they get Kelly, locked in.
Kelly eventually says, let's go, let's head out. She goes on loudspeaker and says,
Megan and Andy, we know you're out there and we'd love to leave you here all night. But as you well know, you've got the only key. Look, we already have Chad and Ralph, guys, so the game's over. Meet us at the service entrance now.
Meanwhile, in the dream lab, Heidi has done some investigating and she has figured out the film's red herring.
That's dated last Monday. I plugged the name Randall in the Times computer.
Six inmates escaped late last night from the rural fireside sanitarium. Also reported missing was a nurse, Gladys Higgins, and an inmate groundskeeper, Jason Randall.
Now we know what happened to the real father. Ferreted away in a private sanitarium. Read the next one.
Nurse found murdered. Being sought in connection with the killing was Jason Randall, inmate groundskeeper.
The sanitarium where the victim was employed. Who are you calling?
Kelly.
Called Kelly and not the police. Don't, good call, right, buddy. Good call. Don't call the police. Look, if you're worried that Peter is not doing his due diligence, don't worry, because Kelly's not there. So he's like, okay, no problem. So Peter calls Kelly's mom. Actually, he goes to her house and tells her to call the police.
Maybe 911 doesn't work on his phone. Maybe so, like the one button doesn't work. So he's like, fuck.
This is one of those, let's quickly go buy some Glade plugins. This is going to smell. Let's cover that up. Go over to a friend's house and then we'll tell them to call the police. That's how the people in this movie work. Anyway, so then he heads to the mall. So, and he makes it just in time for the twist. So if you've made it this long and you don't want to know the twist, we've kind of revealed it already. But if you don't want to, skip ahead. But otherwise, let's talk about this twist, because here's Daphne Zuniga talking about the twist on Why So Blue. She said, quote, I got to play two characters who hated each other. And when we had scenes with these two characters together, we had to do split screen. And in 1984, it was done the old fashioned way. There was no CGI, of course, so they had to lock down the camera, and I would literally get on one side of the frame, yell and scream, and they would freeze, and I have to go and change my makeup, costume, and hair, and come back, get on the other side, facing the other way, and fear for my life. I haven't seen that movie, I think, since we made it, but there are some scenes where I'm all in one frame where they overlay these two. I don't know how they did it. They did it exactly the way you kind of did. They just put, they sliced pieces of film together, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But you see one frame with these two sisters acting opposite each other and also killing. I remember she was strangling. Wait, I had to strangle myself. She laughs. My first time out on a lot of technical stuff. She's also ignoring the fact that somebody is wearing a wig that is wildly not the same hair as hers.
Right. Also, that's the same wig wearing individual that does the from the back semi-nude scene for her in the earlier part of the movie.
And also maybe does the scene in the sanitarium where she's like knocking her leg with her fist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not her hair. And so you get a big chase scene and you definitely are looking at the two Daphne Zunigas and finding which one is the real one, which I'm not going to lie, was a total delight for me. So I love that. I know we're not a Things We Love, Things We Hated, but I was like, I'm loving this back and forth. And sometimes she's playing the good one and sometimes she's playing the bad one, and it's fun. It was a good time. It was good stuff.
And really, did she have to spend that much time going to the makeup chair? Crazy Daphne Zuniga just was her without lipstick on.
They would put a little bit of white on her and kind of white her lips to make her look a little bit more like pale and sort of withdrawn. Anyway, that's the twist. Did you guys see it coming?
Yeah. 1,000%. It was like from minute. For the first time, you kind of see the dream sequence. I'm like, there's got to be like a twin situation here or something. Because I think Also, just remembering back to that period of time, that was like a big thing, like having the evil twin. That I felt like I saw so many made for TV movies and just different things that use the like evil twin plot point. That
yep,
yeah, it felt real familiar. It was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, one thing I thought about when I watched it, you know, again, was why they didn't play with that more. There's even a line that one of the friends, one of the pledges says, where she was like, oh, I saw you going up the elevator. And she's like, oh, I didn't take the elevator. I took the escalator. And I'm like, why didn't we just see that? Why didn't they play with that a bit more and have us see her, but not realize it's not her? Why not just show us a bit more of that?
This movie had to be shot in 2 weeks. That's
yes, right. But I don't want to get ahead of myself in things we love and things we hated.
Oh, so let's just go to things we love and things we hated.
That's right. Let's talk about the things we love and the things we hated about the initiation. Mark, what did you love?
I loved that after the big reveal, there is no explanation about where Daphne Zuniga's sister has been, what she's been doing, when were they separated, which one saw the swamp sex, which one fell out of a treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
There's zero explanation. This movie is like, oh shit, I have a twin. Oh shit, my twin tried to kill me. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, that's not my dad. And roll credits.
I think she is the one like hitting her leg to the side of the sanitarium, but
they never go back to that. They could have done a flashback sequence where they kind of piece it all together for you,
mm-hmm.
like an episode of Murder, She Wrote, but like they don't. She's just left to be like, oh wow, my sister who I just met, who my mom just shot, my mom doesn't, there's not even like, there could have been one of those, and it would have been probably lame, but where the mom explains, I had to do this. You see, when you guys were born, blah, 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 given mm-hmm. just a little explanation. Nope. Not needed, yeah. Audience. You don't get it. The surprise is all you need.
Yep. You're not getting it. Don't care if you wanted it. Not happening. Figure it out.
Right. Right. And I loved it. It was a bold choice that they were like, should we explain that? Nah, we don't need to. Okay.
I also love that Vera Miles is like looking at the end. She's like shot her sister.
Her own daughter
shoots her. And then kind of looks over as the cops are taking her away. And she looks over at Daphne Zuniga and is like, hey, you're welcome. And Daphne Zuniga just gives her the dirtiest look like, no, not into this. And she's like, shit. Like, I killed my daughter for you. And you didn't want to even just like, thanks for that, moms. Appreciate it.
Right.
You know, it gave her nothing. Right. Gave her nothing.
Yeah. She's such an entitled character that even in the moment of like, I know that I didn't tell you about the psycho sister that just tried to kill you, but I did kill her, so I deserve like, something for that.
Hey,
right?
I came through and saved your life killing her, my daughter, that I didn't tell you about. You want to give me some love?
I don't get a hug for that.
I don't get like a little thanks,
again,
mom.
I just felt like that was mom goals. She was like, I always wanted to fire a gun. Now I've done it. Oh, I killed your twin sister.
She did kind of look at the gun like, wow, it worked.
Huh. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She did it. She nailed it. All right, Erica, what is something you loved?
I loved the random party. I guess it wasn't a costume party. Yeah. I only paused because it was it was like a Hidden Desires.
It is a
or
costume
like a,
party.
It is a costume party.
But it's a costume party for like their desires or something like that.
Sure. That's why a guy dresses like a giant penis.
Yeah. Yeah. So it seemed like everybody else had kind of thrown it together. Like, oh, I have a wig. I have like a ballerina tutu. I guess I'll be a dancer. But Ralph's commitment to being the penis and balls was, how long did that costume take? He carved out eye holes. I mean, there was a real commitment to that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I also, it was one of those party scenes that I looked at and said, if I walked into this party when I was somewhere between 18 and 35 years old, I would have said, how long do I have to be here before I can leave? That would have been a hard no for me.
So true.
When, somebody was handing you one of those weird green drinks, you're like, I'm going to go. I'm out. Yeah. Thank you. I'm good.
Not doing that. Mm-mm.
I'm so good. I'm going to leave. So
I don't like this band. I don't like the drinks.
No, I don't
Everyone
like any of this.
Everyone is too into it.
I love that you I have a go. Live band, but I don't like the live band. So I'm out. Good idea, but ideas are only great on execution, so I'm going to be out.
Ryan, what was something that you loved?
I loved Heidi. How can you not love Heidi? She does it all.
Heidi!
She figures everything out. She's grading the papers while Peter romances all the students and writes theories up on the chalkboard while she's doing all the hard work and research. Yep. Like, it's not easy in 1983 to be doing some of the research and going through the files that she goes through. That is some hard work. And Peter's just like, oh, yeah, well, I don't know. I do know who Freud is, so I kind of feel like I still should be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And poor Heidi is like doing everything, you know? She does it all. She's the best. I love Heidi.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
But let's switch to things we hated. Erica. Let's go to you. What is something you hated?
It's funny. I didn't hate much about this movie, yet I hated a lot of things about this movie. I think, but if I had to really pinpoint it, was I really feel like we didn't learn enough about the other pledges or Kelly's other friends. And that felt very sort of squished into the end right before they get killed. And it was like, do you want me to care about these characters? I've learned nothing about them except that one of them plays an instrument and may or may not be a virgin. And the other one is, I guess, takes the moral high road and stands up for herself and was like, and is like, pranks are dumb. This is childish. I'm not going to be a part of this, but that's it. We just don't learn anything about them. And it's a slasher. I don't need a deep character analysis, but just give me something. You could have them say a few lines or have one or two interactions that will tell me everything I need to know about these characters. And it just didn't have it. So I did not care at all when they, you know, met their demise from evil twin. I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah. It felt like they were just in here to be bait until we get, you know, to the big face off with Kelly anyway. So
yeah. We literally learn about Ralph, that he was named after Ralph Cramden and that he wants to be a comedian, but he has to go to business school because his dad wants him to, moments before he is murdered.
Moments. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he says all that and it's like, oh, sad. And then he's killed. It's like, why do we need this now? Right before he's like, so you could be like, oh, no.
Yeah. Same with Megan, who's like the lead of the sorority, I guess, who leads this prank, who was kind of the head of everyone. Like, why was she sort of like targeting Kelly and the Fairchilds? Like, what was her beef with that? Did she like not get a job at Fairchild? Well, she didn't make the management training. Like,
you get it. She's a rich girl, you know.
But even that wasn't very clear. I don't know.
You're right. She doesn't explain why she holds a grudge, why she's singling her out outside of her being a rich kid. But there's no backstory to say why would she not like rich kids. So you're like, I don't know. You're just being an asshole.
But all she would have had to say was just like, oh, Fairchild, you rich bitch or whatever. I mean, it's not that hard.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all I would have taken.
Mark, what did you hate?
Well, look, I'm able to suspend disbelief with a lot of these movies that we watch.
Are you though?
Podcast. I'm able to. But this.
Max
this
miserable,
one to, this
marvelous may. It's Max miserable, marvelous may.
Let's go back year. How much have you been able to suspend disbelief?
Let me take two steps back. Let me start that over again.
This is from the guy who says, but those missions are impossible. I'm like, yeah, that's what the movie's called. But it would never work. This would never work. I know, Mark, it's called Mission Impossible. The whole point is that it's impossible. Okay. But okay. Fair. Tell me how you've suspended your disbelief.
No, I'm going to say I have tried to suspend disbelief. Oh,
okay, very good.
With these movies.
Mm. Okay. Sure.
But in this movie, at one point the survivors in the mall decide to throw themselves a little party. Wine does not come in fruit punch colors.
Yes. Nope. Okay? No, it does not. No, it does not.
Listen, people, you can have a rosé, which will be like a lighter orange. Okay, I can go with that.
Even pink.
A Pinot Noir can be like a lighter garnet, but it's not fruit punch flavor, fruit punch color. That is not, you cannot convince me that you're drinking wine when mm-hmm. it looks like a high, like it got squeezed out of a high C juice box. Also, if you yeah. are going to make fruit punch for everybody to drink, throw an extra scoop in there. It's going to taste better, and it'll actually darken it up a little bit. So give it a go. Did you decide to be super cheap at the end to be like, I only have this much in the can left, so we got to make it work. I don't have any dye. We're just going to have to make it work. So not only was it unbelievable that that was wine, but every step they were going, man, it's needed a little more powder. Just a little more powder. This would have been way
watery.
Better.
Watery.
I hated that there was not enough Gulager.
Tell me
not
about
enough.
It. Get a clue, you know?
We Come need on. More Clue Gulager. But it's more than that, because it's not just that it's kind of early, but also considering the ending, shouldn't he be one of the last ones to go?
You'd think.
Literally, I think he's kill number two. I think mm-hmm. he follows the nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he gets hit with the garden claw.
It just would mm-hmm. seem, knowing the ending, I'm just like, wait, why did she take care of, why did she kill him off so early?
Yeah.
Also, the mom does absolutely nothing to find out where he is.
Right.
Nothing.
And mm-hmm. I saw that, like, when we watched it again, for some reason this missed me the first time, I watched it again and I was like, she tells Peter when he comes over and he's like, can't find Kelly. And she's like, they just found my husband dead in a car. And it's like, wow, you're taking that remarkably well.
Well, remember, she lit her other husband on fire during swamp sex.
It's true. Very
and
true.
Got married like, 2 weeks later.
Right. He had a much more chill death than my first husband.
Yeah. Right. She lit her first husband on fire. Her second husband was found dead in a car, and she murdered one of her daughters. And the whole time, she's pretty chill about it. Like, and about
meanwhile,
all of
she's
those.
Like, Kelly, love me?
I've given you everything.
Kelly's like, no, no, credits roll. We're done. I don't want anything to do with you. It's crazy. All right, let's go to favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
You know, I spent a lot of time thinking about what my favorite scene is. And this is the first time ever that I really had a hard time picking one. And I'm going to say one because I thought of one while we've been talking. But I really, going into this episode, I didn't have one because while I don't think this movie's bad, there are just a lot of scenes. There's not one scene that stands out and is like, wow, that's really cool or that's really funny. You're just like, it's a sequence of scenes that are all like, okay. But I will say the one thing that made me laugh was when Daphne Zuniga's character hits her actual dad with a piece of metal, and he falls off the roof of the quote unquote mall, but he lands on a pile of boxes.
I thought
he must have been like, well, compared to being burned to over 70% of my body, this feels like a gimme. I mean, yes, I fell a few floors and I got a quick bump on the head, but I did land softly. So not too bad, right?
Yeah.
And I love the line after that where Daphne Zuniga's like, oh no, what did I do? It's like, hit a dude with a lead pipe and he fell over the side of a building, which seemed like your plan from the jump.
I did forget about that line.
Pretty clear what you were trying to do, and mission accomplished on what you were thinking of doing, and now you're like, oh no! Like what? I'm like, you are your mother's daughter. You're like, oh no, I killed my other daughter to get my daughter's love. Love me? No, she doesn't love me? Why? Like, what? Do you not understand your actions and how they have consequences? I don't know. Anyway.
No.
Erica, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when Kelly is under hypnosis and she's like, Daddy, fire my dolls. They're broken. Like,
fire. Fire, Daddy. Mommy. Smoke. Can't breathe. Mommy.
Kelly.
Mommy.
Mommy. My God, what are you doing?
Stop them. Make them stop, Mommy.
Kelly Fairchild, you will awaken on the count of three. You will be rested and relaxed. One.
A man.
Two.
A man.
Three.
It's so great. So say she's taken back to nine. Did they say they were nine? 9 years old when she got amnesia?
Yeah. So that's
something like that. What? Eight or yeah. Yeah.
So at 9 years old, she was like, the man, fire, the man, daddy. Like at nine. So I just want to take a minute to like congratulate her for getting into college, because it seems like at nine, she was operating at like a 2 to 3 year old level. So the leaps and bounds that she made academically must have been huge.
Yeah.
I did not know that was your favorite scene. It's absolutely my favorite scene. And I, in defense of Daphne Zuniga, how can you perform that dialogue? I mean, that's tough. That's very hard. That man, like... Also, wasn't it Heidi's theory that she isn't dreaming and this is just a memory, but she can still talk in her sleep? So she's sleeping, but remembering and talking. So she is in a dream state, but not dreaming, but remembering and then talking? Wow, that's very confusing.
It's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. But while we're here, because that was my favorite scene, back to the things I hated. I did hate the fact that Clu Gulager died so early, but it did give us this wonderful, just perfect line.
I miss my sequel.
It was really weird for her to say that, because I was like, what?
That's very weird.
Yeah, you missed your sequels. This makes no sense.
Arguably, she said that line better.
Yeah,
but here you go.
Sometimes I think that man would forget his head if it wasn't attached.
So mean. Like, that so is perfect. Like, what a incredible. Mm-hmm. It's just so, it's on one hand silly, you know, on one hand they're like patting themselves in the back for that. And you're also like, yeah, I mean, it's not as good as you think, but also it's even better than you think.
Right.
100%.
This weird mix. This is weird mix, but I loved it. I loved that part. Of that part that I hated. But in any case, let's go on to final questions. Here are final questions for the initiation. Who is the smartest person in this film? I mean, we all know I love Heidi, but is it Heidi or Beth? Heidi's very good at research, but Beth almost right away basically says, fuck this, to the sorority thing. And she's like, I'm going to bounce. I'm going to take a hot shower by myself. And back at the sorority attic, and then I'm going to pack my shit and I'm out. Who's smarter? Yeah. Is it, you know, Heidi or Beth?
I think it's Beth, only because that is a bold move to be like, this place sucks. You're stupid. This is dumb. Sororities are dumb. I'm out. But before I'm out, quick shower. Using your hot water, dirtying a towel. Now I'm out.
Heidi totally agree.
Does all this work and she does everything and she figures this out and she does everything that's needed to solve this, and then still stays on and continues to work and grades the papers. So I'm like, I don't know. I think she's getting
she's
played
like in
there.
An abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She deserves better. Played. She deserves better. Yeah.
She does. She does.
Yeah. How cool was Kelly's car?
Very cool. I said that out loud when I was watching it. I was like, oh, I bet Mark's going to crunch this car.
The 1983 Volkswagen Rabbit Wolfsburg edition?
Is that the one you're talking about? There we go. Sure. Yeah.
1.7 liter four-cylinder engine, about 80 horsepower. The Wolfsburg edition did give you a leather-wrapped steering wheel. It also gave you vinyl seats. and 13-inch matching rims. So you knew you were a baller. Ooh. But this predated, that was also the Mark I of the golf body before they moved over to the Mark II, which I think was in 1984. Like, that was not a Cabriolet, which would have been same body, but a much more upgraded version was the Cabriolet. Now, that was the really expensive one to get. But I checked, and on the back, it was a rabbit, not a Cabriolet.
Hey, listen, I heard you still didn't have a date for our Come As Your Favorite Suppressed Desire party.
Okay, so I have a final question for y'all. As someone who really likes a low-key holiday movie, is this a Christmas movie, or is this a Halloween movie, or is it both?
It's Christmas. 100% it's Christmas.
But they do a costume party.
But that wasn't for Halloween. That was the, like, your unconscious desires party. They dress up, but it was specific to that, like, your unsaid desires, your unconscious, subconscious desires, unconscious. I don't remember. But it wasn't Halloween.
So this is a Christmas movie. So add it to your list, everybody.
There we go.
This is a Christmas horror. One last final question. Is getting stabbed in the gut not as life-threatening as I think?
Yeah, I think, like the Kool-Aid wine, there's a little leap of faith you have to take there that somehow she didn't hit any vital organ.
It looked like she got him pretty good in there. I'm like, I feel like you're going to bleed out pretty bad. She probably got something good in there. But he's out there laying on that gurney like, life's good. I mean,
maybe it was like when you poke the tummy of Poppin' Fresh, the Pillsbury Doughboy, and you just push him and it doesn't pop him. It doesn't tear a hole in his tummy. It just sort of makes a little indent and he's like, hoo-hoo. Maybe it was like that kind of thing.
I mean, I think you're right.
That's fair.
All right, let's get into some research. This is a film from Unusual Masters, as we talked about earlier. One of the executive producers is Bruce Lansbury, the brother of Angela Lansbury, as we talked about, who also, weirdly, is credited for getting the script of Reform School Girls by Tom DeSimone to New World Pictures, which is how he ends up doing that, which we talked about when we talked to Tom DeSimone. We asked him about that. And so he was the one who brought them the script. Crazy. Also, one of the production companies behind the film was Gregorian Bay Productions Limited, which is the company started by former football player turned actor Alex Karras and his wife, actress Susan Clark, who they had recently appeared in a 1982 TV movie called Made in America, which their company produced. And also they were producing the TV show they were shooting at the time, which was Webster. So somehow on top of that and other TV movies that they made, this company also produced this.
Got to diversify your portfolio.
Yeah. Everyone was just like, let's just make a slasher. So I guess they came in on this. So just an odd bunch of people that made this. And anyway, together with a few other investors, which are all credited in the very beginning, the budget came in at apparently $3 million. Shot this all in the summer of 1983 in Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas. The mall sequences were shot at the Dallas Market Center, which is like they would sell products to different buyers. It was basically like a wholesaler. Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. The college was actually Southern Methodist University. Mm. And the Dream Lab scenes were actually filmed in a maid's closet at a Holiday Inn that they dressed to look like a lab.
Wow.
That explains
it. Wow.
Yeah. And Mark said they only shot for about 2 weeks. They used a lot of local people. In fact, the cinematographer, George Turrell, he was a local Dallas cinematographer. They used a lot of local Dallas crew. They opened the movie on April 6th, 1984, in parts of California and Kentucky. At drive-ins where they would show the initiation, it would play with Deathstalker or Angel, as Angel had just opened in January of 1984. Children of the Corn opened in March of 1984. So the initiations, like part of this first wave of actual product, either made or picked up by the new owners, the people that had bought New World Pictures from Corman. And I think this is a pickup, but they were Angel and Children of the Corn were their like first movies that they produced themselves. Philadelphia Experiment was New World's other big project, which came out in 1984. It didn't fare as well at the box office, but it made a bigger splash when it was released on video in November of 1984. That is to say, Philadelphia Experiment. And it was followed by The Initiation, which was released in December. All of this was on Thorn EMI, as New World Video was not did not begin until 1985. In fact, in December, it wasn't just Initiation that was released by Thorn EMI, but also Bad Manners.
Also released. Bad Manners.
Also released by New World Pictures, but also a pickup. But The Initiation retailed for $69.95.
I bet it did.
That is with, ooh yeah. Uh-huh.
Worth every penny.
While Bad Manners was only retailing for $59.95.
What?
So a little cheaper to get Bad Manners. You got to pay a little bit more if you wanted to get Initiation. Which, by the way, Initiation, from the reviews I saw, didn't fare super well.
That's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Bad Manners did either. If we think about it.
No, I don't think it did at all. Yeah. And I checked. I was like, how did Initiation do? Did it crack the top video rentals? It didn't. But.
Oh, it's a shame. Okay. That's a good poster. I like the poster for it.
It does. It does have a very good poster. Poster saying they pledged themselves to be young, stay young, and die young.
Ooh.
And, you know, not bad. They gave it a nice, you know, rollout. They started playing it throughout all of 1984. Not bad for one of their first pickups. But that's it for The Initiation. We hope you enjoyed this episode. So please check out our other episodes. We have more coming, one more episode coming to you for this year. And then we'll be taking our year-end break and coming back fresh next year. The whole new theme month. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
I am Adam Lundy, co-host of They Live by Film, a podcast dedicated to bringing you film discussion and interviews from around the world. Every week, my co-hosts Chris Haskell, Zach Bryant, and I discuss a wide range of films, from monumental classics like Vertigo and The Rules of the Game, to the craziest, schlockiest movies ever made like Deathbed and everything in between. We are also lucky enough to have sat down with some of the biggest players in the boutique Blu-ray and film restoration game. If this is your thing, then come hang out with us every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, wherever you normally stream your podcasts, and now as part of the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network.